awesome nerds, and welcome to another episode and another series of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch television shows we really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in different role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Talaman, and I am joined by my co-host for another series. It is Danny Calamari, who is currently frozen in an iceberg for 100 years.
100 years, yes. I've finally been thawed out like Captain America and not like a character from this show.
That's right. Yeah, I was almost thinking that it's Rita Repulsa. It's like getting freed. After 1,000 years, I'm finally free now to take over the Earth. That's so old, some Power Rangers deep cut for people who are my age. That's sad. Because we are talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, the animated series from 2005, I want to say. It was a while ago. It was a very, very long time ago. We're talking about chapter one of book one, book one being water, and then chapter one being the boy in the iceberg.
Woo-woo.
See, they're doing it as books.
Books. 2005 is correct, thing that they want to by do. The way.
Yes. Fucking read it all.
You could probably hear my typing on the mic, sorry.
Live Google. It's a thing that we do. In this episode, Katara and her sister, Katara and her brother, Sokka, discover a boy in the iceberg, and it turns out he's an airbender, and they have some fun, and then they alert the Fire Nation that his presence is there. And that's kind of it. I like these short little synopsises, because I've also realized that I didn't actually write down the synopsis that's on Netflix for this one. So I completely forgot about that. Oops. So there's a lot of things that we could talk about in this, but I want to start off with probably the most iconic line in the entire series, which is "that all changed when the Fire Nation attacked."
Yes.
Like, we all know it all changed when the Fire Nation attacked, right?
I think it gets changed? Drilled into your head.
Yeah, it's like, what changed? Fucking dunno.
Everything.
Just everything. Everything changed. And how do you, like, this, every episode of this series starts with the little description of who the Avatar is, and Katara's little monologue about the Avatar and the Fire Nation. It's so useful. Like, can you imagine a D&D game where every single session you get to start with, hey, there's a demon and it's taken over the world and you're trying to stop it. Like, every single time you're reminding them why you're there and what's going on.
Yeah, that is good.
It'd be so useful.
And it being...
the number of people who would forget.
It being in... it's Katara's voice, isn't it? That does that.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I guess, implies that it's probably one of the characters, one of the players at the table doing that.
Yeah.
As well. Or maybe you have, like, well, your script.
I've got my notes as...
Oh, sorry, go.
Katara's players read the handout that the Game Master gave him at the start of the session, or session zero. And has just said, yep, I know what's going on. And the Game Master's like, well, enlighten the rest of us, because they're not paying attention. It's like, well, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked, and this is what the Avatar does, and this is what this person does, and this is what this person does. This is how the magic works. Meanwhile, Aang's player is just, cool, great. Let's do that then.
Yeah, Aang's player is like, very much like, I don't wanna know all of that backstory. That's too much. So, like, can I just, like, explain it to me in-game and as a character?
Yes.
I don't have to deal with any of that. I've been asleep.
Yeah. Like, that is such a great... it's such a cop-out for understanding lore. It's such a great way for the Game Master to get to explain everything. It's like bottom-up world-building.
Yeah.
Where you're getting to go, okay, all you know is your village. And when you leave, that's when people will explain things, but you kind of know everyone in the village, that sort of thing. But it's just for the one character of, yeah, I don't know what's going on. I'm in a new time. Okay.
Last thing I remember, yeah,
that's
fighting,
I don't know about.
I was fighting Red Skull back in World War II, and now I'm here, and people are throwing water at each other.
Throwing water at each other? Oh my God, if Captain America had woken up in the Avatar universe instead... That'd been a very odd crossover.
Boring as well. He's like, doesn't have any powers, so it's just the guy with a...
Well, neither does Sokka.
Yeah, but... Yeah, true. That is true.
Yeah. I will try not to reference the Braving the Elements podcast with Dante Brasco and Janet Varney too often, even though it's one of my favorite podcasts. For reference, Dante Brasco playing Zuko in this, and Janet Varney, who plays Korra in the Legend of Korra series. But it's hard not to. Go check out their podcast. It's so good.
I haven't seen that.
But we will be talking about... Speaking of voices. All right, yeah. So I'm going to talk about voices a lot because voice actors are fun. Katara, played by Mae Whitman, who other people might know as Anne from Arrested Development.
Oh.
Or one of the evil exes from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. No one?
Wait.
No one? Bueller?
Hang on. I did Bueller? Not know this.
Yeah.
What?
True facts.
You've just blown my mind.
Yeah. I know. It's fantastic. She's such a good actor. It's tempting to go, really? Her? But no. Amazing actor. She also played Stephanie Brown, I think, in Young Justice.
Oh my god.
She either played Stephanie Brown or Cassie Sandsmark. I can't remember. Either way, a very very talented cast through all everyone, so we'll point out people as we come. Because these are going to be shorter episodes because not as much happens. They're much more episode of the week sort of feel to these, which kind of works for D&D, doesn't it?
It's, yeah.
You go to a village, there's problems. You solve them because heroes.
Yeah, it's kind of you deal with that week's problem and you come out kind of with your status quo mostly, maybe having learnt a bit of knowledge and going off to the next location.
Yeah. And it feels like this is a show where if we're looking at it as a role-playing game, the Game Master does have some solid world building set up. Like the idea of the avatar is pretty solid. It's like you have people who have individual magics for the elements, and then you got one person that can use all of them.
Yeah.
It's like, great. That's sorted out. And now you have the balance that's been thrown out. And that's caused all these problems. So when the avatar shows up, your quest is to fix these problems.
Hmm.
Like, that's a pretty straightforward, easy to understand, high concept adventure.
Yeah,
it is. And every episode is just like little side quests on that.
Yeah. I've got a question with that whole world building with like the your dungeon master's come in, he's got this world. First of all, how do you think the conversation goes down to decide which player gets to be the avatar? Because that's
a good question.
That's a big, like, who gets that responsibility? Who gets to have everything while others only get, like, one element? Or, you know, for other people, no element at all.
I'm wondering whether they went in saying, oh, no one's going to be the avatar. Like, we're not going to have the avatar here. This is about finding the avatar, all right? And threw that out the window very quickly.
Yeah. Or.
Like.
Or the avatar didn't exist in the whole world building. It was just this. All the nations were fighting each other. The avatar didn't exist. And then this one player character was adamant. Like, hey, I'm going to be every element. I'm going to come in and I can have every element. And that's what we're going to do. And you, I'm again, like you said, Katara's the only one that read the handbook. So just so gung-ho, and the DM finally went, you know what? Okay. There's an avatar. There's one guy that can do this. Cause I don't want to ruin the rest of my world building.
And I can see them allowing it because knowing that Aang is the avatar, shocking. And Aang's, given that Aang's first line is, do you want to go penguin sledding with me? I feel like the Game Master was like, yeah, you know what? Giving you all the power, that's not going to unbalance anything.
No.
You're not going to... You're not going to suddenly go, I want to pull the moon out of orbit. It's like, no, no, no. You're going to use it to catch animals, aren't you? You're going to have some pets. Okay, yeah, that's fine with me. You can be the avatar.
Yeah, it's definitely not a min-maxer, just like someone who wants to be cool, but not someone who knows the game well enough to like break any of the systems.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. It's just like, no, I just want to be able to do that too. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And I don't actually want like the... he doesn't want the over 9,000 power.
Yeah.
He just wants all the powers. And the game master said, yeah, okay, but you got to work at it. Like, you got to go all these places and figure it out. Like, you got to talk to someone and actually get the power before you can use it. He's like, yeah, all right, whatever. I can do that. It's... Yeah. Yeah, there's some stuff going on with that, I think. Yeah. Well, actually, no, I want to talk about this quest then, because it's not finding the avatar.
No.
Like, the quest that we see later on when Aang and Katara are talking, like, Aang is all like, yeah, I've got to find the rest of the airbenders because they're all gone, or I don't know where they are. But Katara wants to be a waterbender, and they're like, okay, let's go together and take you and become a waterbender. It's not we're setting out to save the world.
Yeah.
It's let's just do something that's very personal for you as a character.
Yeah, it's really small scale.
Yeah.
I think... Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is just Katara wants to learn waterbending. And Aang is seemingly the only bender she's come across at all. So that's it. That's like the entirety... currently, as of episode one, the entirety of her motivation.
Yeah. And that's perfect for a beginner character. Like, you don't... And well, she's got, like, a little bit of a darker backstory. Well, not darker backstory, but more tragic backstory. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that it's only old people and Sokka and children in the village, it's like, well, you know something bad has happened here. She even says, like, our fathers went off to fight the Fire Nation 3 years ago and haven't come back.
Yeah.
It's like, that kind of says what the situation is. But so it's such a personal thing. It's just like, this is something that I want to achieve. It's not, I'm out for vengeance. I'm not out to, like, find the mystical jewel of King Arthur. I just want to do this for me.
Yeah.
And the game master's like, great. I have a whole bunch of strings that I can pull to get you along the story I want to tell.
Yeah. No, I like it. It should be lower stakes for a lower level character. Or if there is overarching world stakes, which there is in this world as well, your players should still have some sort of personal... want and need. And I think a lot of the time it can be easy for the player's personal want and need to just be, I want to save the world. And that's it.
Or I want to go on an adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be something small. Like, I've had players be like I'm adventuring, but I'm looking for like the best way to cook potatoes. Like that. I'm trying to find the recipe. And I'm like, cool.
Great.
Like, it doesn't mean that it's going to stop them from doing the overarching quest. But they've got their own little personal thing that they're keeping an eye out for.
It's surprising how often when I have asked this question at tables, people just go, oh, I'm just here to make money.
Yeah. The most common one.
And I always want to say, okay, but what are you going to spend that money on?
Yeah.
Like, are you just going to have a big pile that you sleep on? Are you going to use it to buy a little house? Are you going to make a kingdom? Because money's only good for what you use it for.
Mm.
And specifically in a world where they don't have high interest yield banks, like, say, Avatar or most D&D worlds. So it's like, all right, yeah, you can get a lot of money, but what good is it to you? Like, what is your actual motivation for going out and adventuring? And I don't think first-time players, I don't think have to.
No.
like come up with that idea. But I think it's a great idea to offer it to them.
Yeah.
And like have those questions like, hey, what are you going to do when you finish adventuring? Like, why are you out on this quest?
Yeah. And I found in some of the one shots I've ran, if the players come out like with a lot of money at the end, or they've like it's happened in a lot of my games, they've got something that they like, oh, we'll sell it and get a lot of money. So then I ask, like, as an epilogue, what do you look like in like 6 months, in a year? What are you doing? Like, what has that money been spent on? And it's funny, a lot of the time, like, if they've gotten attached to a certain character, like an NPC or something, how that changes as well. And seeing that motivation change. But yeah, you do still have some players that just go like, I don't know, I'm rich now. Okay.
Yeah. Buy a house, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's I think when you've got the quest that doesn't just rely on beating the villain or getting the gold, that's something that drives a story more.
Yeah.
Like, you always have that thing to pull at. You can have, oh, Katara wants to waterbend. Well, even if she achieves, I know how to waterbend now. It's like, okay, but now there's a lost technique that you can go and discover. Okay, now there's somebody else who wants to learn and you've got to go and get them to bring them to your school. There's all these other options based on her own personal goals.
Yeah, and in a longer form campaign, that works really well, I think, because then you don't want a player to check out and be like, well, I've done my personal quest. Like, the rest going forward isn't going to be about me, so I'm not really going to pay attention.
I know recently I had a character die.
Yeah.
But they were already sort of reaching the end of their story.
Okay.
And they were someone that was basically driven by, I want money so I have security.
Yeah.
Because he'd grown up on the streets. He just wanted to have, you know, he just wanted to have a house. He wanted somewhere where he wasn't having to scrounge to eat. And he was finally getting in with the Thieves Guild, and the missions they were on were going to set him up for life, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was cool. Once I'm done with this, I'm out of here. Like, you lot seem to be off to save the world, and that's not my deal. I just want my own little pocket of power, which I'm going to get, and then I'm done. And part of that was me realizing, okay, he's interesting, but he doesn't fit in with the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Like, he's finished, essentially. I'm going to create someone new who does fit in with the rest of the story. Otherwise, I'm going to be in that situation later on in the game where I'm like, why am I even still with you people?
Yeah.
Like, we're fighting liches and dragons. And it's like, I just want to cut pockets, cut purses and steal money. That's not my deal, you guys. I like you, but I'm not going to die for you. And then you got killed, so it doesn't matter. But I think having that idea of, having that idea of the personal quest and then going, okay, well, you can move that further on. You can add more personal quests as things happen. Like, maybe you get beaten in combat in your first couple of sessions by the villain. And now it's like, okay, well, now my quest is to beat that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, for those reasons as well, I do like, if you've got an overarching campaign, I don't know if I've said this before, having the villain at least be some sort of presence early on or midway through, at least, because I think you can very easily fall under the thing of like, you're trying to get to the villain and your actual villain's only around for like the kind of end bit of the campaign or the last few sessions.
They show up. The heroes bust in and like, we're here to kill you. And it's like, who are you? Did you make an appointment?
Yeah.
Like, no idea who you are.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, if you have them go in earlier on, then you can create a like a personal relationship between the villain and the heroes as well, which can then alter the character's motivations.
Yeah. And I think that's what we see immediately when Zuko is introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we see him, we immediately know that he's a villain.
Yeah.
Like, he's introduced, like, scowling. He's introduced, like, all in his armor.
He's got the villain
ominous
star.
Music, that kind of. Yeah. But then we're also introduced to Iroh, who could be the wacky sidekick, but he's all like, I'm not going to get to drink my tea. And very much pulling Zuko back from that darker place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost immediately. Like, Zuko is obsessed, and he's obsessed with the Avatar, but it's not with our characters yet. It's just with this vague concept of who the Avatar is.
Yeah.
So he's very much that villain energy, and everything he's saying is like over the top. It's like, finally, I'll redeem my honor. Finally, I'm doing this, doing all this stuff. And Iroh, immediately we know who he is as well, because he's like, oh, my game, I wanted to sit down, oh, my feet, oh, no, I'm so tired, that kind of feel to it.
I love it.
So
I was gonna say, Zuko gets this big, like, literal glowing beam of light in the sky to, like, motivate him,
yeah,
and to be like, this is what you're looking for. And Ara's like going all like straight into gaslighting him, like, nah, that's nothing, it's just the light, it's just the way the sun shines sometimes, it's, let me get back to my game.
It sounds so ridiculous. It's like, you've chased so many other leads. It's like, what were the other leads? Yeah, were they also giant flying, like, fiery pillars going into the sky?
And also, they weren't even that far from it. Like, is it not even that much out of their way to go there? It's just Ira being like, cool your jets. It's like,
just chill. Yeah,
take
just
it down like a few, yeah, calm down. Few levels there.
I love Iroh. Me like too. I know we're meant to, but I fucking love him. He's so great. But yeah, he's just, and that's the thing. We're introduced to that villain very early on. And I feel that's a good way. Like, there's none of the characters that we know as player characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this episode, the player characters are kind of Sokka, Aang, and Katara.
Yeah.
They're the three that we really know. Maybe even just Aang and Katara for this episode. But none of them are in the scene with Zuko.
No.
And I feel like this is a good, like, having that cutaway while characters are like going somewhere, you can introduce the villain so the players can see what's going on while the characters don't know.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried anything like that? Or
where you mean like having a like a scripted scene, you mean almost, that don't involve the players? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe not a scripted scene. Well, I guess, yeah, a scripted scene where you can see, like, hey, there's a lich and you can see him watching his crystal ball or something like that.
Yeah.
Or far away you can see, or far away there's the army and it's marching closer and closer. But the players don't really know that. They just kind of can establish that based on the knowledge that they already have of the world.
Yeah, I haven't. I've thought about it a lot, doing something like that, but I think to do that, you do need a group of players that are a little bit more experienced and that you have a decent enough, like, personal, what's the word? Not relationship.
Rapport
with, that, you know, they're not going to metagame through that knowledge.
Yeah.
So, like, because it's awesome. It can do stuff to, like, build, like, world build and even add some tension. Like, oh, they're getting closer. They're, you know, they're doing their plans over here. But, yeah, there's a lot of players, I think, that would use that knowledge that they're not supposed to have.
Yeah. Or even maybe, if it happens too often, forget what they're not supposed to
correct.
Know.
Correct. And
because
yeah.
they've been privy to it all so often.
Yeah. A spell, like, later on in a campaign, a spell like Scry is great to do that with. So if they're like, hey, what are the villains up to? Then you can kind of do a scene like that, and then they're allowed to know that information as well. But yeah, I think it does depend. I wouldn't do it to newer players because they would get confused by it.
Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't have an idea that this isn't something that they can interact with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's it's a tricky thing to establish. I know there's games like Monster of the Week where you can have a little scene beforehand.
Okay.
Because that's very much based on, like, X-Files or Buffy or some of those old TV shows where there is the cold open where there's none of the characters that we know. That it's just someone getting murdered by a monster and you go, all right, cool, that's the monster.
Right, it's the teenage couple sitting in the car on the lookout kissing when the monster comes in and attacks them.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you cut away from the car and you just see the blood, and then it's the credits come up, and then we cut to the party actually showing up to investigate.
Yeah.
Like that's a good way to do it, I think. Where you do it at the start of the session, or maybe at the end of the session, where it's like a post-credit scene. And yeah, I feel maybe that's just a way of describing it for TV. It only works in TV.
No, like you can do it, yeah, in certain ways. With that though, like with this show as well, what I do appreciate being a like it is a kids' cartoon, it's a Nickelodeon cartoon, that like you do get that introduction of your villain, and as far as you know, as far as we are aware as the viewers in this episode one, this is our big main villain of the series. And while he's doing his kind of like, I'm gonna find and I'm gonna kill the Avatar, he's kind of getting, like we said with Iroh, kind of shot down a little bit.
He's being undercut
He's
every
being
time he has the
undercut.
big
Like
speech.
normally, like you know, you can have big evil villains that have your comedic relief, like kind of Salacious Crumb. That's a bad reference. Sorry, but like
I mean, that's accurate.
that little side character that's like, yes, of course, my lord. But it's usually that side character that's made to look silly, and that's getting undercut by the main villain. So having it kind of flipped here, it's interesting, especially for a kid's show, I think, because it shows you straight away, like, oh, this isn't probably just I'm evil because like I feel like it.
I think this ties in with what we're going to see a lot of through it, that tone of the series, and particularly when it's children or adolescents. That when you were talking about sidekicks who were seen as comical or were the ones that were the butt of the joke, I'm thinking Maleficent in like the classic Sleeping Beauty and her little goblin sidekicks. Like Maleficent has these massively evil speeches, and she's laughing at her psychics because they're so stupid and so useless. And it's like, okay, the audience is meant to laugh with her because they're just so useless. Whereas this, the undercutting of Zuko, we're meant to be on Iroh's side. Like he's doing these big melodramatic speeches, and Iroh then going, oh, yeah, but you've done some wrong things before, too. It's like, we're meant to go, oh, Zuko's just a kid. He's just another adolescent like the heroes. He's just someone who thinks he's all that, but he's also got flaws, and makes him much more human, which makes him a much better villain. But that's basically what Iroh does from the moment we're seeing both of them together.
And I think that is something that, and I'm sure it'll come up so much when we watch this show. It is really good at humanizing their characters and their villains. And yeah, we get that straight away, and we'll get that as we keep watching this show. Like I have seen all of this. Very.
This is one of the few times where we both watched like the entire series multiple times rather than, oh, yeah, I'm just watching it week to week.
But yeah, no, it's one of those ones that's so very happily going back and watching it. What
Yeah.
change of pace from last
But I'm
time?
thinking again. I'm thinking when they finally do go Penguin Slayer, and Katara's like, I haven't done this since I was a kid. And Aang's like, you still are a kid. It's like, that's kind of what they're saying with this, that there are those little bit of elements that there aren't, that this is a more serious show.
And that's
But we
actually.
will always remind you that there's still the fun.
And it's so funny because you have this really childish Nickelodeon scene of these two characters jumping on the backs of penguins and sledding around in snow. But that line.
Penguin otters, I think.
Right,
I
because
think they're penguin
every
otters.
animal is a mix of two in this world. But like you that line of I haven't done this since I was a kid and then you are still a kid, it's actually really sad. Like you know, and like you said before with the village just being elderly and children, and with all the men that have gone off to war, like it's like Katara herself has almost forgotten she's a kid with how much she's already had to deal with at such a young age.
And soccer as well. Like, soccer's only, what, like 2 years older, but he's in charge of the village. He's the one that's, like, telling the kids how to protect the area.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty... It must be this episode where Aang runs into the tower in his little flying machine. And Sokka's just like, my fortifications!
It's
like, yeah, of course. But that element of tone is very much like an RPG.
Yeah.
Like that emphasis on the comedy, even in the dramatic situations. Like, that's the players at the table making comments about the melodramatic speech that the villain's giving. About the, you know, you failed your skill check and now we're going to make a joke about what actually happened.
Yeah.
And I think one of the important things is, while it does make it a comedic element of the story, it doesn't always undercut the seriousness of what the world is like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the characters are making jokes and Aang's like, you still are a kid, and Katara's finding that joy of penguin sledding, but it's still very aware that there is that seriousness of, yes, we still do need to watch out for the Fire Nation, and yes, we still do need to protect ourselves and not let anyone know that Katara can waterbend.
Yeah.
It's kind of not like a whiplash, but it's more like a pendulum. Like, when things get too serious, it makes the joke and swings back. And when things get too wacky, they swing back and remind you that something bad can happen.
Yeah.
I think it's directly after the penguin sledding that they find the wrecked Fire Nation ship.
Yes. And then that, like, that's a tone shift in itself, and it's like visually, it's not exactly fun and joyful. It's this ship that people, like, you know, it's still a kid's show. You don't see any corpses or anything, but people presumably died on.
Why aren't there any corpses? Did the water tribe eat them?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. Or the penguin otters ate them.
Yeah, the penguin otters are actually carnivorous. It's like, yeah, there's nothing left of them. Oh, and what else? Yeah, Sokka says another time, no time for fun and games with the war going on or something.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, but the war's not here. Like, you're not under fire right now. But there is that shift. I think I'm going to just pat myself on the back a little bit, like I'm Scully and Echo. That it is a pendulum going backwards and forwards. Like, when we have something really fun, we've got to swing it back to remind that they're serious. And when something's too serious, we swing it back and have something fun. And I think because of that, it never goes too far in one direction. Like, it doesn't become a Monty Python farce, and it doesn't become super grim, dark, serious, everyone's sad.
Yeah.
And that's a good balance to have at the table as well.
Yeah, it's a good balance to have at the table. It's a very difficult balance to maintain. A really rare balance to find in a kid's show in terms of TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of speaks to why this is such a well-loved piece of media.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, directed by Dave Filoni. Of Star Wars fame now.
I did not. Mr. Filoni. Yeah,
I didn't realize. I was just looking at it at the end of the credits came up before the next episode started, and it goes, directed by Dave Filoni. I'm like, no, hang on a fucking second. Hang on a second. Dave Filoni, Dave Cowboy Hat Filoni, who's like Super Mandalorian, Super Ahsoka, Super Rebel, like all these shows, Dave Filoni. All right, that makes sense. This all becomes clear now. Yeah. Oh, one day I'm gonna convince someone to do Rebels with me. That's gonna be fun.
Rebels, so good.
Rebels, yeah. I want to go back just a moment before we get on to Dave Filoni's and awesomeness. That idea of you have the, let's just say that Katara and Aang are the two players now. Like, they seem to be the ones that are really interacting with the world and have the most agency in this adventure. Because they do kind of... Katara is the one that finds Aang. She's the one that accidentally waterbends and pops Aang out of the iceberg. Yeah. So they're the ones that go into this Fire Nation vessel and like go and explore and like try to find all this stuff. And to me, this was a fantastic level one dungeon.
Yeah. You got
like all of it was just skill challenges and skill challenges and skill checks and investigation rather than fighting.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like super high stakes either. It didn't seem like the traps that are in there, they're not like, I don't know,
lethal,
super lethal, like it possibly could have been, but it, no, it wasn't anything like this is going to be game ending. This is just getting you used to, like, you know, you might fail at some of these. Here is the basic idea of what a dungeon would be like.
Yeah, it's like setting up the next adventure, but also if you fail, things will get worse, but they won't kill you. And yeah, I feel that that's really a good way of describing it, that it, there's a penalty for failure rather than a severe penalty for failure. Because I think they only really trigger one trap and it doesn't even attack them. It just sets off an alarm.
Yeah, exactly. Which kind of, I think, fast-tracks the Fire Nation a little bit.
Yeah, it's like the Fire Nation was already coming along, but now they know exactly where they are and they know how to target who they're looking for. And it's like, all right, that's fine. But all of the rest of the stuff was investigation. We got more information about the Fire Nation, or Aang, and the players got more information about the Fire Nation. Had they stuck around longer, they might have got a treasure or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe they have gotten a reward. And it, I like that idea of a dungeon without monsters.
Yeah, I do like that as well.
And not even a puzzle either. It's just you're investigating ruins.
Mm.
And the only thing, you have to overcome obstacles rather than traps, or rather than puzzles.
And especially in terms of world building as well. Even if, like, say you've got an adventure and even if you're like building up, you've got this dungeon coming up and the players go in there and the dungeon's like been done by someone else.
Yeah.
Maybe a long time ago. And you can see that there was monsters here, but they're dead. These people were really good at avoiding traps, so the traps are still in place. But you can do something like that, and that's a good way of world building or introducing a new concept or a new, like, oh, maybe we have to go after these guys. Or in the case of this show, like, showing off like the dangers of the Fire Nation even while they lay dormant there. And especially compared to like this village where it's like a couple tents and some sticks and that's it. Then you got this massive Fire Nation vessel. It is a really good,
which is clearly like an industrial type of nation. And meanwhile they're hunting with a bone spear for fish. Yeah.
And they're not that far from each other. Like, ultimately, I'm pretty sure this world isn't huge.
No, it's not. I mean, they talk about it in the next episode too. But that idea that, you can travel quite quickly from one place to another and you're not that far from the front. Like, this is the Southern Water Nation. This is the entire tribe of water people.
Yeah, in the south, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this isn't a massive nation. This is a village. It's like that, yeah. I forgot where I was going with that. I just kind of got lost in the expanse of what this world is that they actually managed to create. But that's right. I was thinking with a dungeon where you're sent in and everyone's already dead, it's like maybe you're sent in after an explorer like who's gone missing.
Mm.
Like, this is the great hero, and it's like you're the last hope. You're the servants who waited outside the dungeon, and you head in and you find like all these amazingly powerful beasts which have already been killed. But because they're that good, they just went, "Yeah, I'm just going to fly over that trap. I'm not going to worry about it."
Yeah, exactly.
So all the traps are still intact, and you, as this tiny little level one, have to figure out how am I going to get through this pit of acid, because your master's somewhere deep inside. That might be a fun adventure. Just you're the servants that are brought along by more high-powered adventurers.
You're like... Yeah, you know, a wizard, a lot of the time, they have their assistants.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're the wizard's assistants. just desperately trying to keep up.
It's like, just clear out that dungeon for me. I'm not particularly... Just go forward and tap every cobblestone with that 10-foot pole. Just do that for me. I'm going to be over here making lunch for us all.
And that chest over there that's weirdly like placed, not around any other treasure, that'll be fine. Just go and unlock that for me.
Yeah, just bring whatever you find in there. Just bring it back to me, okay? This is what hirelings are for. The Hireling Adventure, that's what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, wonderful. That's kind of it. There's probably a couple of other things that I wanted to talk about for this first episode, but I think that's pretty much covered.
Yeah, because this is, in my opinion, this episode is a part one episode.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it ends, like, saying to be continued.
I just figured that was because it was the first one of a series.
I'm pretty sure most episodes don't finish like that with Avatar. I could be wrong. Because, Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I stand corrected.
It's more of like half of a larger, like, essentially like a 40-minute opening to a series.
That definitely does track.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm not looking at it now, but I wonder if they released both of the episodes at once when it first came out. I'm not sure.
Probably.
Yeah, because,
That sounds right.
I don't know. I didn't know there was
episode zero.
Sorry?
There was an episode zero.
Really?
Yeah. Which I've never seen, but it exists.
Oops. Should we have done that?
No, as far as I'm aware, it was like a test episode to like prove the proof of concept for the show.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit janky, and it's just... Hold on, let's see if I can find... Yes, here we are. Sokka and his sister Kaya, later named Katara, must travel the world to find masters for Aang, who is the Avatar.
Right. So it's a non-canon, just test one. Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I don't remember...
It's pretty much...
Yeah, I don't remember the exact, like, way this originally came out. I was, in fact, 6 when this show released.
Demographic.
I was. Honestly. And I adored this show growing up. So I'm very, very fond of this show.
It is very good. Honestly, I came to Avatar from Korra first.
Right. Yeah, you did tell me that, actually. Yeah.
And which is weird for most people. Most people didn't like Korra because of how great this was. But there's so many connections between the two. And I was like, all right, I guess I better go back and watch this. And I was like, yep, that's good. That's a good show. It's a very good show. And I'm sure that you will also find this being a good show because you're going to watch along with us, or you've already watched it, which is even better. But we're going to wrap up there, awesome. I reckon.
One thing we do need to do before we go is kind of figure out what the outro is going to be. What do you reckon? Oh, wait, I know. This podcast is going to change the world.
How does that sound? Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
That's a good one. Or something like, and then everything changed when the podcast ended.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think everything changed when the podcast ended is more iconic.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. When the podcast nation attacked. there's other stuff I need to say before I get to that bit. Danny, you can do that outro bit if you want when we get to it.
God. Okay.
Just so you got something to say and you're not sitting there like a thief used to. Jeez. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are found. That's a really great way of listening to us and subscribing. And you can leave reviews in app because 5 stars will get us out to more listeners. But tell your friends too. If you've got a friend who likes Avatar and likes D&D or just any role-playing game, get them onto this podcast. It's DNDNTVPOD at most places, or D&D TV. Because apparently that's really hard for people to find on Spotify, but it's there, so shouldn't be too hard for you. You could also find us at Emporium Fortress on Sundays, where we run games from Masters of Alchemy for Dungeons and Flagons. You can find Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service, on their website, which is mastersofalchemy.au, all one word, and we run a bunch of other games there as well. There's a whole bunch of details on there. I am on Instagram, which is at DNDNTPOD, or my personal account, which is at Talumin, TALUMIN83. Danny, what about yourself? What have you got to plug and where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Danny.Calamari. It's about it. Like Jeremy, I'll be at Fortress Melbourne on Sundays most of the time, running games. Yeah. That's about it for me.
That's exciting. If you want to send emails to us, if you want to tell us your favorite first dungeon, then yeah, send the emails through to dndntpod@gmail.com. But until next time, until next time, stay safe. Be kind to yourselves. May all your hits be crits.
And everything changed when the podcast ended.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.